Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 13, delivered on October 6, 2015. The title of this lecture is Equity.
Today, equity. Equity is the other side of capital financing of a company. There was debt that I talked about over and over again. And now spending a little time on equity, we go through in today's lecture and kind of like discussion, I'm going to show you stock trading. I'm going to talk a lot about it. And then in the Thursday lecture, I'll do some more of the technical work. You've seen all of this before. I've shown you the trading screens, and I've also shown you the formulas, and now I'm going back through it again to solidify it, to consolidate the knowledge that I've tried to get you to acquire. But starting off, equity represents ownership. And when you think of equity, most people think of common stock. Common stock is the way usually people invest in a company if they want an ownership position. Now, you are never going to own, in a large corporation, you're going to buy such a little amount of common stock that it really won't have any effect whatsoever. It's irrelevant. However, that doesn't mean that you don't worry about what you're investing in. Of course you do. But first things first, common stock. It gives the holder, the owner, the right to vote at the annual meetings for the board of directors. Voting rights come with common stock. However, you do have to be a little careful on that because, as I had mentioned before, sometimes, once in a while, you'll find a company that has two classes of common stock. There is an insider's class, the old family. They have super voting power. And then there are the outsiders who simply are, they can vote, but their votes are really minimal in comparison to the super voting rights of the insiders. I generally, when I was an investment consultant, I recommended people kind of like stay away from those because you're never going to do anything. The family controls it, and sometimes the family is able to move forward and be very good about their stewardship of the company. But other times, these families, over a period of generations, the quality of their leadership and their ownership and their decision-making declines terribly. And you can't do anything about it. So you can't even, it doesn't matter what you try to do. They've got the majority power to have the board of directors be what they want, and therefore have the executive management be what they want. Walmart recently announced its new president. Walmart is controlled by its insider family. Well, who did they appoint? Another Walmart boy, a Walton boy. They just keep putting him in there, and as time goes on, the question is, are these people really the best and brightest you could find for that company? Or are you really talking about something that's becoming a fixed factor of production over a long haul that's dragging the company down? That would be a decision that you would have to make in your best judgment as an investor. Anyway, common stock. You can get a dividend, but you don't have to have a dividend. The company decides that on its own. You get to go to the shareholder meeting if you want to. But you don't have to. You can sign a proxy, which I'll talk about in a minute. Now, the other flavor of equity is preferred stock. That's the one I showed you that you get a declared dividend that's on the certificate forever. Par value, $40 per share, 2% dividend. you are going to get that 80 cent a year check forever. You don't have voting rights, though. That's one of the downsides. I'm going to tell you, there is an exception to that one. But anyway, if it's cumulative preferred, well, which is the most is the typical kind. If the company doesn't pay you your dividend, they have to just accumulate them and catch up someday. And until they do, they can't pay the common shareholders a dividend. So that's a nice thing about cumulative preferred. However, it does not have voting rights unless there are some preferred stock issues out there that if the dividend isn't paid for a certain number of years, it triggers a performance obligation. The company has to allow the preferred shareholders to appoint a director on the board. Again, it's not usual, but there's some preferred stock out there. If the cumulative dividend isn't paid for a certain number of years, the preferred shareholders have the right to get together and put one of their own on the board of directors, more or less to try to get that board of directors back on its feet, getting it focused on catching up with its obligation to the preferred shareholders. There you go. Now, preferred stock, and I had mentioned this, I think, before, preferred stock for a long time was considered sort of like an ideal investment, part of an investment portfolio for fixed income investors looking for fixed income. Pays that dividend every year, forever and ever and ever. It's sort of like a bond in the sense that a bond pays a coupon. It has prior obligation, bond does, over the equity. Well, a preferred gets a sort of like a coupon. It's that dividend. It's a fixed amount of money. It's not declared by the board. It's a fixed amount of money. And it goes on for, the difference is that, of course, preferred goes on forever. But preferred is equity. It's, like I say, it was very popular for a long, long time as an investment vehicle for fixed income investors. But somehow it's just kind of fallen out of favor. Even though, interestingly enough, if you are doing an IPO, an initial public offering, or a public offering of any kind, doing a stock offering is expensive. The brokers just beat you to death. Your syndicate beats you to death on their commission, on their fees, and all of that for the company issuing common stock. Interestingly enough, preferred stock and bonds, they don't charge a whole lot to sell those for a company. So the question is, why did preferred stock fall out of favor? Well, maybe it's because it's just not exotic, not sexy. Look, here's one of the dirty inside stories about wealth management, portfolio managers, and all that. They do an awful lot of pretending they're doing something. We're rebalancing the portfolio. We're constantly looking at screens to find out what is a good investment, what's not a good investment. We work hard 24/7 for you. Bull crap. Most of them are what we call indexers. They buy a portfolio that is indexed to perform at a specific level of risk and expected return, and then they sit back and just tweak it to keep it in balance. That's all they do. They pretend they're doing a lot of work. With preferred stock, it's hard to pretend. You just buy it, and there it goes for your clients, just paying them their dividend, and all you have to do is sit back and get your commission. And again, though, that makes it, you don't want your clients to get the idea that you are sitting on your fat ass doing hardly anything, which you are, but you got preferred stock makes it a little hard to show, pretend that you're doing something else. Anyway, look, the mechanics of a stock market. And I'll start with a small investor, what are you, about 5'6", shoe size 6.5, right? Okay, that's small. 5'4"? You are a small investor. Okay. A small investor would be someone who's buying a round lot, a couple of round lots. Now, remember what I told you, a round lot is 100 shares of stock. You're going to be buying in round lots, so if you're going to say, I'm buying to your broker, he's probably going to assume that it's a round lot. I'd like one, you'd say, I'd like two MSFT. Well, that's two round lots. If you want to buy an odd lot, then it's going to be expensive for you to do it that way. That's why it's kind of utterly stupid to buy a share of stock for someone. It's just such a huge waste of money because you're going to get charged at a stupidly high fee for some bizarre little odd lot, like one share of stock for someone. Buy them a round lot. Come on, open up your wallet. Okay. When you put in your order, there's two different ways you can do it. Well, there are more than two ways, but two basic ways you can do it. You can order at market. I would like, let me use Kroger as an example. I'd like three round lots Kroger at market. That will mean that the broker will buy the stock for you at whatever the price prevailing is. Okay, you'll buy it at straight up spot. The other way you can do it is to put a limit. I want, let me have two round lots of Kroger at 38 or better. That would mean that don't buy it if it is above 38. Buying it at market guarantees you're going to get your stock. But the downside is that if the stock has a pop between when you put in your order and when the broker executes the order, well, you could get a little nasty surprise. So limit orders, generally speaking, it's better to do a limit order, just to put some kind of a cap on it. It doesn't have to be a tight cap. If you see the Kroger's trading at 37, you might want to put a cap on it of 38, limit order, two round lots, Kroger, 38 or better. And that's how you would say it, 38 or better. But, of course, then you might not get the stock, and you might want the stock. If you think that stock is going to go up in price, and you've put a limit on it, well, maybe you were right and it's already started its trail upward and you're not going to get it because you put in a limit that was too tight and it's already above that limit. Okay, now, back in my time, we had a small order entry system. You got to the front of a line if you were making a small order. And now they have another system. It's Super Display Book. I think it's called SDB, the Super Display Book. Essentially, when you put in your order, it'll go to the broker, and then it's just automatically executed just instantly on the Super Display Book. What's the time between the broker putting in the order and the order executing? About 5 milliseconds. That's all. It's just instantly. And that's it's a variation on what was once, and actually it might still be around too, the small order entry system, the SOS system. Essentially, it allows small-time investors at least a chance to get into the market and grab something. You could actually use that to your advantage. If you are playing arbitrage, arbitrage is on pennies at a time. And that means that time is of the essence before that arbitrageable gap closes. So you got 5 milliseconds, you might be able to do something. Now, in the New York Stock Exchange, you're going to be dealing through a broker, a specialist. Now, remember what I told you earlier in the semester. A broker represents the buyer. An agent represents the seller. A dealer represents himself or herself. So you will be dealing with your broker. He represents you, not anyone else. He represents you. So he is going to do his best for you. That is his fiduciary duty, to do his best for you. So he's going to get your best price that he can. There's going to be a bid price and an ask price. The bid price is going to be the price at which you can sell. The ask price is what you are going to be able to buy. The specialist is going to be out there. You're probably going to be dealing at the ask, but you might actually have to pay above the ask, so at least for part of the order. The specialist, now, if you're in a larger investor, say you're going for 15,000 shares, it will execute with the specialist on the floor. The specialist on the floor of the exchange, they have the job of managing a certain number of group of stocks. These are theirs, and there are specialists for all the different stocks, and every stock has quite a few specialists that deal in that stock. However, suppose that we've got an order for 15,000. You've put in an order for 15,000. Now you're just saying 15,000 at market, and I'm your broker. And I've got 15,000 is big enough that I'll take care of it. And I'm going to go down to the floor of the exchange, and I'm going to go right up to a specialist who deals in Kroger. I'm going to say, all right, I need 15,000 at ask. You got 15,000 at ask? You say, I got 12,000. You got 12,000 at ask? Okay, I got it. I need 12,000. Anyone three? You're there right next to me, and you say, I got three. I'm selling. I'll buy them from you. What do you want? 38.50. Okay, I got 12,000 at ask, 38.50 on 3,000. I put two tickets together. I've bought your stock. Okay? It's an open cry system. I will go like that, and I will go like that, and then I will say, I want it right now, and then you will take it, and I will say, you're a specialist. You look like one. And I'm going to say, 15,000, I want to buy 15,000, and you're going to say, I got 12 at ask, and so I go over to you, you say, I've got 3,000, I got ask, and you say, yes. Tickets go together, it's all open cry, we've made our deal. No one's going to break the deal, you already promised me, and we'll fill out the tickets later. I confirm for you, I got your stock. Bought 12,000 at the ask, 38. The ask was 38. Okay, but I got 3,000 more from you at 38.50 above the ask. Got how it works? The open cry system is insane, but it works one way or the other. God knows how. What was I going to tell you? Look, thing though is, the Amex works different from the New York Stock Exchange. The Amex is actually like a rental room. It's a giant rental room where dealers, now remember I said a dealer represents himself or herself. Dealers just essentially have a space there. They have their space there. They have an inventory of stocks that belong to them. They own them. And they deal in those stocks. So if I am trading in the Amex, I am going with someone who has his or her own interest in mind. Has no use for me whatsoever unless I can do something. And so I can go to the Amex and it's a crazy system because you are in it for your own gain. You hold an inventory, and every Amex trader has an inventory of his specialty stocks. And so I'm looking around, okay, I got this company. He's a specialist. He's the specialist in that stock. He's the dealer in that stock. I'm going to have to go up to you, and I'm going to deal with you. And you're going to, we're just going to have an argument about it. You need to get rid of your stock and make money. I need to buy your stock and not get creamed on the deal for who I'm representing. Okay? So somewhere in there, somehow, without gunplay, we make it work. And it's a living system from minute to minute, second to second. The price is fluctuating. You've got supply, I've got demand. We have got to find a way to clear the market from second to second because I'm competing against you. You're competing against possibly another dealer who's got the same stock as you. So somewhere in there, we've got to make this work so that we can all go out and have candy drinks later, okay? The NASDAQ is completely different. That was more my world. The NASDAQ is not a place. It is an electronic system. computer terminals. Back in the day, you rented or you rented this complicated terminal. Imagine before the age of computers like you know them, these big ass terminals or these Linotypes and all this kind of stuff. And every NASDAQ trade happens in electronic space. It has for decades. This is before most people think computers were invented in the year 2000 or something like that. No, this was around way, way before that. It works like this. Essentially, every broker-dealer who's a NASDAQ broker-dealer will be posting bids and asks on stocks. And when you want to sell stock, a NASDAQ stock, you will just put it into the electronic system. I got this many to sell. The system will try to match you up with a buyer who will buy it. And then there will be a process, the bid and the ask and the settle and all of that kind of stuff. Goes on 24/7. It goes on all the time. It has, like I said, for decades and decades. Interestingly enough, in the NASDAQ system, that's that small sound you're supposed to hear right before death. But anyway, in the NASDAQ system, I would get a company up, clean up its financials and all that kind of stuff. Get its stuff back into compliance with the SEC on its form 10-Qs, 10-Ks, get 8-Ks filed, do all that kind of stuff. And then I'd go to the NASD, and I'd apply for a trading symbol. And that was you filed for that on form 15C211. Fight back and forth with the people there. They were, believe me, back in that time, they were harder on me than the SEC was. The SEC, yeah, it looks so good to us. But the NASD, they would watch you like a hawk. They would just comb through the financials and all of the documents they asked for. And finally, after you had essentially convinced them that you were their bitch, then they would give you a trading symbol. Okay. Well, the trading symbol. But that doesn't finish it up, because you've got to find market makers who will trade in your stock. Now, I had my little tickle book of market makers I knew, little broker-dealer houses around the country, and I'd call one up. Okay, there was one outside of Spokane, and I said, okay, I got this company, it's got a trading symbol. Going to need five market makers. Can you be one of them? And then, of course, here came the bad part. Yeah, we'll look into it, but what are you going to give us for our inventory? In other words, you've got to give them free common stock. You just give it to them. And, of course, then you had to go to the company and explain to the officers. I, as a consultant, would say, okay, we can have a market maker make the market, and he'll get four more, but he's going to want 50,000 shares of common stock. 50,000? Why are you on that? What the hell is this all about? Okay, one, he's not going to just go out there on his own and buy your stock so that he can sell it. And if he has to sell stock, he's got to have a way to make some money off it. So you got to give this guy 50,000 shares, and then he's going to give some to some littler broker-dealer houses so they have some inventory in the stock. They're not going to pay you for it. They're doing you a favor. And the bigger the favor, the more stock you give them, the more likely they are not to beat the hell out of your stock if someone sells it. Because the first thing I guarantee you is when that trading symbol goes up again after the company's been flopping around for 10, 15, 30, 50 years, you're going to have shareholders come out of the woodwork and try to sell their stock right away. And who's going to buy it? Oh, those market makers are. Well, what's their incentive to buy it if they're going to have a hard time unloading it because no one knows about this company yet? I see. Okay, now do you get the picture? So that was a big battle every now and then you'd have. The thing was, though, that the more stock you gave the market makers, the more incentive they had to keep that price good on that stock. They've got only a few shares of that stock, and someone sells five round lots, they're just going to drop the price down to a teenth, 1/16th of a dollar. But if they've got a big stake in it, a sell order, they're going to nudge it down because there was a sell, but they're not going to pound the hell out of it because there was a sell. So there you go. That's the NASDAQ. It's tighter now, but it's still kind of a wild west for companies. Smaller companies are generally on the NASDAQ, although you have some enormous, huge companies on the NASDAQ. And the New York Stock Exchange is sort of like the elite, the big ass companies are on the New York Stock Exchange. The AMEX is more speculative companies. Some, they even have an emerging markets sector. Part of it that's got some pretty speculative, promising companies. But those are the biggies. And then you've got regional exchanges, and then you've got in Europe, they're not called stock exchanges. They're called bourses, B-O-U-R-S-E-S, bourse. So, but it's the same thing. Now, I might as well just take this on. I'm going to show you something. This part of the lecture is where you get to see, and I'm going to talk more because you know more now. I can tell you more now about looking at stock tickers. I found out it's too hard for me to go into my own professional screens on, and I probably wouldn't want to on this system anyway. So I will just use one of the lame ones out there that's floating. Okay, here we go. Let me refresh this screen here for you. We'll start with one a simple one, Aon. Okay? Now, you're going to look and you're going to see the price. First of all, previous close, 91.52. Somewhere between when the sun went down and the sun came up, there was a little bit of a concern about the company, and there was a sell right at the opening and pop, pushed it, dropped it down a little bit. You see that it closed higher than it opened. So there was something overnight. Someone had a gas bubble or something like that. Now, bid and ask. Look, that's a nasty one. Isn't that a kind of an interesting thing? You see the bid and the ask, they're 3 cents apart. You can sell it at 90.75, you can buy it at 90.78, but notice that the price is below the bid right now. That's not unusual, that's a little bit bigger than you would usually see. Well, not really. But it's already taken a butt beating for the day. It's down 1%. So it's on the downstroke. So you're seeing the price leading the bid downward. Do you see that? The price is leading the bid downward. And so that's essentially dragging it. Now, what I would be looking for, and here's where we get a little bit more into the technical, the elfin stuff. So you're going to hear me teach you how to be elves here a little bit. But I'm looking at the as an elf. Now, this isn't real time. But if I was in real time, seeing that, I would keep my eye on how persistent that was, that price below the bid. And the reason I would be doing that is to see when it stopped pulling like that. Because right now there's momentum downward. You see how the settle, the price is pulling downward like this? What I would look for is when that moment that's creating momentum downward. I would look for when that begins to back off and you see the price coming closer back up towards the bid. I would be a little bit interested in keeping an eye on that nice little thing right there. Anyway, yes. Ask me questions, please. Did you have one? Okay. Now, what was I doing here? Oh, what? Okay. 1 year target estimate, you're going to learn enough from me so that you don't have to look at some other genius's target estimate. I'm not worried about what some overpaid analyst has to say about the stock. Use your own judgment. You're going to get the tools from me to at least begin to think on your own. Personally, a 104.11 on Aon, no. Seriously, I wonder how big the bottle of scotch was he got from the boys at Aon to give that kind of a projection. Beta is 1.22. Talk to me. Beta of 1.22. What do you know about it? Right off, just instantly, I need you to tell me. Say it. Let's try that again. That one scares me. You're staying off the floor for a while. Get some duct tape. Keep her off the floor of the exchange. Woman, what do you say? What do you see? Beta of 1.22. Immediately. Risky. Higher risk than the market. At 1.00, the stock would have exactly the same volatility in a well-diversified portfolio as the market itself. It would essentially swing just like the market at one. That's a 100% of the volatility of the market. But remember, stocks on their own have extreme differences in volatility. The only thing that matters is what the stock's risk is in a well-diversified portfolio. If you're just buying a one stock or two stocks willy-nilly, you deserve all the punishment you're going to very likely get from the excess volatility. So in other words, if Aon stock, common stock, were in a well-diversified portfolio, its contribution to the risk would be 122% of the market's risk. In other words, this guy will swing about, maybe a fourth more than the market will. That's high risk. That's not high risk, but it is riskier. This is one that you would want to push up the risk of your portfolio. Okay. Day's range so far. It's got a range there that's kind of interesting. 52-week range. Interestingly, if you look at the 52-week range, what do we got there? That guy is fairly close to the middle of its 52-week range. Volume, nothing to write home about, but then again, it's early in the day on this thing. So the market cap, $25 billion. Now, the dividend yield. The dividend yield here is 1.2%. $1.20. And the yield, in other words, the $1.20 divided by the current price, is 1.34%. In other words, this stock is performing. God, I hate those twitchy ads. If you bought this today, and the price stays about where it is, well, no. If you bought it today, the dividend component of your total gain would be about 1.34%, a little bit above a passbook portfolio, or a passbook account, a savings account. Right now, savings accounts are paying crap. This is paying a little more than that, but you're taking more risk. Now, there are two parts to your gain, two parts to your total yield, your total return. There is the dividend yield, how much you... what your dividend is divided by your price that you paid. That's your dividend yield. The other part of your yield is going to be your capital gain yield. How much you sell it for divided by how much you bought it for. The two of those together constitute your total return on an investment. You flip this stock in a year, you've got 1.34% dividend yield, and if you bought it, let's say, at 90 and sold it at 100, you'd have an 11% capital gain yield. So your total, do you see that? You'd make $10, say you sold it at 100. If you bought it at 90, sold it at 100. You would have gotten a 1.34% dividend yield, but your capital gain would have been 10 divided by 90, which would have been 11%. So your overall yield would have been just a little better than, maybe 12.4%. Let me say that one more time to make sure that you get that in you. You're going to make money two ways on the stock. You're going to make money on your dividend. You bought the stock for $90. They gave you $1.20 in a dividend. So that means that you've got a 1.34% return on your dividend, for the dividend yield. But you're also, if you sell the stock, you're going to get a gain. Hopefully, you'll get a capital gain. If this stock, you sold it in exactly 1 year from when you bought it. You bought it at 90, you sold it at 100. That is an 11%, 10 divided by 90, an 11% capital gain yield. So the total yield you would have gotten would have been your dividend yield, 1.34%, plus your capital gain yield, 11.11%. So your total gain, your total return on this stock, holding it for 1 year, would be 12.45%. 1.34% plus 11.11%, 12.45%. But, of course, that would mean this stock, of course, pays a dividend. So part of your money is going to come in a... So there's a little... At least you're not going to get your creamed on this. You got a dividend yield that's positive if there's no dividend. Let's go for another thing. I'm going to look at one here that kind of creeped me out. I saw this one a couple of days ago. There's a mistake. There's got to be a mistake in this one. Kroger. Previous closed with 38.07. It opened a little lower, 38.01. And now the bid and the ask are both at, 37. Notice how the bid and the ask are pretty darn tight. They'll generally tend to be tighter at high volume with large numbers of shares and all that kind of stuff. They tend to be wider with lower volume and all that kind of stuff. But here, you got a nice tight. Notice the price is below the bid. It's holding down on the bid. That's not awful, though. Do you see that's not as serious as the last one was? It's below the bid. In other words, sell orders are selling below the low price. In other words, to unload stock, some traders are selling below what they would actually even have to for it. Okay, the buyers are able to buy, at a decent price here. This beta is a lie. There's no way. That's got to be a mistake. It sort of worries you when computers make mistakes like that. Someone keyed that in wrong or something's gone bad. The day's range, notice that the day's range is actually fairly tight. That's 42 cents a spread on this. Let me show you something here. Okay, dividend yield, it's got a dividend. I'm going to show you something here. I'm going to take you out 1 year. Now you notice over a period of a year, you begin to see some things that are kind of cool. You see that there was clearly a time when Kroger had been considered not a very good prospect, an investment prospect. The sentiment was that Kroger was going to be one of the casualties in the war of the giant, the big boxers. Meijer, Walmart, Hy-Vee, Giant Eagle, they were going to take out the last vestiges of the old grocery store chains. Kroger has surprised the analysts. Kroger had a very strong, a good earnings report just recently. It's showing signs of being able to survive. It has customer loyalty. They're still having a problem with making their stores not so dingy looking, but they're working in that direction. So you had a climb up here. Now I want you to see something here. Notice, first of all, that this down here is your volume. Notice how your volume tends to be associated with spikes and troughs. See how you got this volume here, pop the price. That's nothing but the magic of buyers screaming for shares, and the more they scream, the higher the price that they're willing to fight for goes. More volume, pushing the price up. On the other hand, notice how you had something rather a strong, and it was sustained, sell-off. Do you see how this was a sustained sell-off through here? This was just beat it up, pound, beat, slam, whack. I'm going to show you something here, and we're going to look at this and a couple of others. This is technical analysis. This is the charts and darts and all that kind of stuff, the elves, what the elves do in their dark, quiet caves when they're not surfing for porn. See this right here? Look at these three tops. You had declining tops. Now, what we call that is a neckline. We call that a neckline. The one thing that you want to always look for is the test of a neckline, an intermediate neckline. Did the stock push to the neckline? Was it able to break the neckline in no more than three tries? Well, if I'm looking at this, there was a meager attempt here. But you had a pretty serious neckline forming downward. And look here. First try, it busted the neckline. That is a buy signal. Now, I'm not telling you to buy this, okay? I'm telling you how we looked at it back in my time and how the old-style elves still look at it to this day. Do you see how this Kroger didn't just test that neckline? It just beat the hell out of that neckline. That is a strong buy signal for a stock when it has a declining neckline and it tests it and it breaks through it, especially when it breaks through it on the upside. Now, Kroger's going to test it on the downside. I can tell you that right now. It's going to go back down and it's going to probe that neckline on the downside. It might even nick it on the downside, but if it comes back through it and recovers, that means that that's a confirmation that this is that the buy was a good idea on this. I'm going to show you a few more here. Just let me get some more stuff here. Do something else here. Next up, let me do Gap. Seriously? Okay, Gap now. Currently trading at 28.75. It's got a previous close of 29.08, and it opened at 29.06. That's not bad. There was. Do you notice something right now? Just guessing off the top of your head, what would you say the market's doing today overall? What does it look like's happening? Not obviously, but it looks like it's a down day on the market. It looks like the market's just having a pissy day. It's one of those. Have you ever had kids? No. Okay, you were a kid, and when you were 2 years old, there were some days when there was just a wild temper tantrum. You know, bring out the power hose and, you know, just keep going until the kid starts glubbing. Okay, but then there are those days when it just walks like, and it doesn't stop. Those are the kinds of days. That's the kind of day the market's having now. It's just a pissy day. It's just a little bit whiny and fussy. And anything that you say is going to make it go, That's the kind of day it is. Okay, that's not saying anything about any of the given stocks. This is just saying that its diaper is needed to be changed. It's got a diaper rash. That's all. Don't sweat any given day unless it's an apocalypse downward. So we got 28.73. Now, again, notice that the last order was filled, at least part of it, well below the bid. You see that? That you're having, it's just one of those, am I just looking at that right? Is that an 8 or a 6? That's a 6. No, that's an 8. God, don't get old. Just shoot yourself before you're my age. God. I should have asked Robin Williams for some advice. Oh. Too soon? Okay. Woman, redeem yourself. What's the risk on this stock? Yeah, it is. That one's at 1.35. That's getting into more, I would almost say, that's getting into speculative. When I go see above 1.2, and this is everyone has his or her own sentiment about where risk really begins. You drive like a blind trout. You don't see 90 miles per hour on an icy road as risky. Me, I see 20 miles per hour on a dry road as risky. Okay, but once you get up to 1.25, above that, you're beginning to talk about a stock that is more of a speculative investment. Now, interestingly enough, this stock beta is 1.35, but it has a very serious dividend yield. Do you see the dividend yield on this stock? That's a strong, robust dividend yield. Now, that might be what might be going on there. Here's one possible explanation. It might be that the Gap actually had a stronger stock price back in the past when its dividend policy was set. And a company would be very reticent to change its dividend policy. So what might be going on is that the dividend might be high because the stock price used to be high. So that might have been a modest dividend yield. But when the stock price fell, that same dividend magnifies in importance. And the company doesn't want to lower the dividend because then the markets would just defecate bricks over something like that. It's possible. Now let's have a look at the, and then going back through, PTE. That's actually a modest PTE. That's price to earnings. In other words, you're paying $10. An investor right now is paying $10 for every dollar of current earnings. That's actually a low PDE anymore. Now PDEs, people don't even blink at 50. But the PDE, again, means that right now, I'm paying $10.85 for every $1 of current earnings. That's kind of hard to get your. I still have a hard time getting my mind around that one sometimes. But anyway, 1 year. Let's look at the 1 year. Ouch. Anyone got the sound? An MP3 that makes the sound of a toilet flushing. Ouch. Oh, that just hurts. That just. Look at this. You see the neckline? You see that neckline? It's not even trying to probe that. This is just down. Straight down. That's a nasty story that's telling. That for me, and again, I'm not telling you to invest. You go find your own investments. People say, well, could you have some investment advice for us? And I say, yeah, buy low and sell high. And some of them actually write that down. Did you see that? It's not even trying to pretend that it's in a short or intermediate term position. Now, going back here, let me take you back here, and I'm going to try American Eagle, AEO. Notice, look at that. Bucking the trend. Do you see it? I mean, you say, well, that's just one penny. Yeah, well, one penny when everyone else is getting an ass bath is something to talk about. Excuse me, I tend to get very emotional about this, okay? And look at this. Look at that. Last trade, was that at the ask? Look at that. Nice, tight pattern. Now, American Eagle has been criticized. And there is talk, well, it might not make it because they haven't, their stores were great in the 90s and in the early 2000s, but people have moved on, and American Eagle Outfitters hasn't moved on. There's a lot of negatives that have been said about it. But what I'm seeing is a market that's not really ready to take those negative twos seriously. 1.24, there you go. A little riskier, but okay. Dividend yield, oh, a strong dividend again. Now, let's have a look. Oh, this is going to be an interesting thing. Look at that steep neckline. Do you see that thing? Look at that. And do you see how it tested the neckline there? It didn't make it? Again, look at that neckline. It tried to test it, and it failed. Again, you give it three tries on a neckline. I'll bet the next one it's going to push, it's going to technically break it, and then it's going to turn back tail and get scared again. The traders will back down and start selling. And then it'll be on the third one that'll be the robust test. Will it again break the neckline and stay on the other side of the neckline? But there's a good, great, actually, example of what I was telling about, one of my favorite trading, technical trading tools. Using a ruler and drawing these out, and it sure does look like it tried right there to break that neckline. But it failed, if I'm looking at that right. Those two tops right there are forming, intermediate tops are forming it. Every one of these is lower. Now we've got to see if the traders will push it back through it and hold on the other side of it. If they do, that's a buy signal in my book. Not in yours, in mine. Okay? But boy, there was a nasty spike there. Okay. Back down here. I'm going to take you through two more here. Well, actually, you call it. What do you want to see? The next one is yours. Give me one that you want to see. And remember that you might want to do this before you start getting yourself employed by a company. Here's a rule. If you see the stock price going like that, you probably shouldn't look for a job there, okay? Unless you're going to be helping them liquidate their inventory. Give me a stock. Call it out. What?
Sun Edison.
Sun Edison. Now, there's an oddball. Sun Edison. I wouldn't even be able to try.
It's just
S-U-N-E. S-U-N-E? Oh, I knew that. Jeez. Oh, there you go. There's a bargain. The Blue Light Special at Kmart. $8.85. Okay, it opened. It's on its way down. But again, this is a pissy market today. And unless you are doing something really cool that makes the market happy, it's going to be a bad day for you. Okay, so 904, it was the previous close, and it opened with someone with a sell package. And it went down to 890. The bid and the ask, well, look at that. Look at that. Last one was at least part of the last trade executed above the ask. Do you see that? That was what I was talking about before I showed you the screens. Do you see that at least part of the last order executed above the ask price? So that's something to keep in mind. Oh, geez. Look at that beta. Okay, here's a rule. No. I mean... Okay, have you ever watched those YouTube videos where people eat these peppers? And they're always looking for a pepper that's worse than the last one. There for a long time it was the ghost pepper, and then it was some pepper, and then now they're on to the Venus death pepper. And, you know, more and more people are proving Darwin right, that the weak are taken out of the gene pool for their stupidity. This is a very high-risk stock. And it's earnings per share. Well, that means that it's losing money. It's not just losing money. It's losing money out of every hole in its body. And, of course, what does this tell you right here? What's that tell you right there? Talk to me.
No
dividend. In other words, you're riding on capital gain only. So let's have a look at the 1 year on this I don't think Cavalcade is going to be in the offing. Y'all see that, right? That's what we saw. What in Texas we used to call yeehaw. You're on your way down there. I don't even know how you would draw a neckline, except maybe one with a noose. Yeah. What the hell are you showing me stock like that for? You know, let's look at something respectable, like Volkswagen. Now, remember that Volkswagen is a foreign company, so it is actually an ADR. And so you won't get some of the reporting information. But let's have a look at the 1 year. Yep. That's the look of a Volkswagen Rabbit coming to the end of the bridge right there. On the bright side, though, notice how it's stabilized. Now, here's the thing. The Volkswagen made three mistakes. One was it cheated. Well, you can cheat. Two was it got caught. Three was it didn't spin. It just stood there. Yeah, we really screwed up. No, you come back out fighting. And they didn't. And so all that happened was they were just destroyed by it. There's the problem. One, cheat. Two, you get caught. Three, then you don't fight your way out of it. You don't massively power out the ads, the press releases, the president of the company coming out. We did not do what they accused us of. And if we did, by God, we'll deny it. You have to fight your way back. And if you don't, well, you deserve the spanking that you're going to get. And this, by the way, is not just a spanking. This is a spanking with one of those boards that has the holes in it and, you know, the rough surface that wasn't sanded properly and finished. Yeah, Volkswagen, just, it failed its shareholders. It failed them by cheating. It failed them by getting caught. And then it failed them, finally, by not standing up for them when the market started to beat the hell out of it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying you should cheat, but the point here is that once you have done wrong, it's one thing to say, yeah, we made a mistake. Here's the exact steps we are going to take to make sure that this never, ever happens again. They didn't do that. Tylenol. Do you all know the Tylenol story, the Tylenol scare? Some years back, Tylenol, some crazy-ass mo, put poison in the Tylenol bottles. Back then, you just open up a bottle and you put poison all over the country. People were dying. It was called the Tylenol scare. Of course, Tylenol, all the analysts, well, Tylenol is gone. They pulled all the Tylenol off the shelf. They threw it all away. And everyone said, well, that was interesting. The Tylenol brand will no longer be around. Tylenol came right back. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to lead the industry in safety. We're going to lead the industry by now putting a seal over the opening of the bottles. We're now going to lead the industry by making the caps difficult to open so that people are not opening them in the stores. We are going to box them, and we are going to put a seal on the box. We are going to come back. We are going to assure you that we will not let this happen to you again. Tylenol, within a year, Tylenol was back up there, top of the game. Because they dealt with the problem and they aggressively showed that they are not going to let it happen again. Instead, what does Volkswagen do? Yeah, we really screwed up. You know, really? I mean, at least the president of the company, I guess, resigned. No, you take him out and you shoot him in the public square or something. I don't know. Okay, next one. MSFT. No. I didn't want Microsoft. I want Apple. Apple. Because they're different ADRs. Okay, and an American depository receipt. These aren't really the stocks. They're sort of like a proxy for the stock. Okay? They're sort of like a proxy for the stock. And so it's sort of like divisions. agents of a company that are able to sell because their finances are completely separated. They are able to represent as a unified investment. A Porsche is separate from the other company. And that's a good thing, too, because, you know, I hate to see Porsche go down. Okay, here we go. Apple being beaten up, the beta, basically almost the market. Apple is so large, Microsoft is so large, Google is so large that essentially they are out the economy now. You put those three stocks together, you're talking about essentially everything, a lot of other things are kind of irrelevant. Beta's low, 2% almost 2% dividend, 1 year performance. Oh, look at that. A booming stock market, but wow. That's kind of a sobering perspective. Now look at the troughs. See these troughs? Those are nasty troughs. And I'm almost wondering, I don't see any way it's going to test this neckline. But what really concerned me is Apple going to test that lower neckline, the downstroke neckline? That would be what would concern me. Just as an investor with a little bit of a risk aversion, I would stay away. I would not be putting money into Apple right now. The reasons for it, I can tell you reasons all day long. But at the same time, it's the technicals that I'm looking at here today. And finally, another company, just real quick here, I want to show you, Halliburton. Halliburton profits from war. That's what it does. Its job. It was once the president of Halliburton was Dick Cheney. And then from there, magically, we have a couple of wars from which Halliburton profited insanely. So the curiosity here goes beyond... This is a very safe company. Now, why is Halliburton a safe company? It's not that huge. Its market cap is $33 billion. Why would a Halliburton be a safe company? Can you tell me that? Do you have no idea? Yes, it's contracts with the government, absolutely. But for what? War. And war is always good business. Don't you ever forget that. No matter how many people die in it, no matter how much destruction of our future happens in it, how much the budget deficits collapse, war is always there. And look at that. Interestingly, even Halliburton has been slowly declining. But notice right here, you see how it's working to break a neckline? You see it? It's going to test the neckline. It's going to, probably going to test it today, at least through the rest of the week. Now, what would you think that might mean if a company that profits greatly from war, that has been falling because we have ratcheted down our theater presences in the two major theaters, Iraq and Afghanistan? Oh, my, look at this. It's going to test its downstroke neckline. What would that tell you? It tells you more than just about the stock market. It tells you more than just about this company. And I want you to think about it when you look at a stock like this, because it might very well be whispering what the market thinks is going to happen to the market for that company's products. If it breaks this neckline and stays above it, that might mean that the market think something is going to happen that would do very well for Halliburton. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.